Economic importance of international logistics. The international logistics activities represent about 15% of the total volume of international trade. That's about US 1.2 trillion worldwide. In addition, international logistics generate approximately US $500 billion in additional government revenues from customs duty alone. The global need and the effect of global supply chain integration, global logistics must support operations in a variety of different national, political and economic settings, while also dealing with increased uncertainty associated with the distance, demand, diversity and documentation of international commerce. Strategic business initiatives must change as a firm and its supply chain become progressively more and more global. The intermediaries in international logistics. Intermediaries such as freight forwarders have proved to be resilient and adaptable. Otherwise, you would not have seen such growth in the magnitude of such international business activities. They develop new functions within the advent of containerization, simplified documentation and advances in IT. As earlier said, there are many times when a company takes the services of a 3PL or a 4PL because primarily apart from the logistical efficiencies, because they have ITs and ERPs which are very, very high end and advanced. Not all the intermediaries are 3PLs. Intermediaries provide safeguards, but intermediaries default then becomes serious. Most organizations depend on intermediaries for expertise in supplies, capital purchases, staff contracts and outsourcing. Intermediaries refer to many companies or individuals that facilitate trade. So you have the concept of direct consumer sale, selling through retailers, selling through wholesaler retailer, which is perhaps still very common, especially if you look at the Indian context. Roles performed by intermediaries: production, product logistics, support logistics, customer contact, transaction processing, local knowledge, at times cheap labor, and risk management. Now, what are the benefits of intermediaries? Intermediaries are value adders in the value chain. Greater efficiency in making goods available to target markets offers the firm more than it can achieve on its own through the intermediaries, contacts, experience, specialization. So you have, so when you are dealing in a international transaction, you would like to have an intermediary who has the knowledge of the local country. There are many times when companies who are setting up shop in developing countries like India or Africa, they initially go with a distributor, start business, then when the business reaches a certain level, then they start their own offices, their own operations in the country. The importance of intermediaries: the scope of services is overwhelming. Various types of intermediaries play important roles in international logistics. They help reduce the transaction cost. They play a strategic role for new and established players to enter into the global market, as I just said. The functions include transport, distribution, supply chain, warehousing, scheduling, warehousing and storage, contract packing, shipping and forwarding, moving abroad, overseas removals, air freight, everything comes under their purview. Now, what are the main tasks of an intermediary in a logistics channel? The four classes of tasks primarily performed for the shippers: transport services, logistics center services, includes warehousing, information processing, professional advice and support. The three classes of tasks performed for the carriers: marketing services, asset holding and assortment and volume convenience. The tasks performed by logistics companies acting as intermediaries vary between shipper and trading partners, and they fall into the broad classes of inventory management, information processing, product transformation and delivery services. Non-operating intermediaries. The non-operating intermediaries include broker services of other firms. Non-operating intermediaries find economic justification by offering shippers lower rates for movement between two locations than by direct shipment via a common carrier. The primary intermediaries are freight forwarders, shipper association and the brokerage houses. The main advantage of the forwarder is a lower freight rate obtained from the consolidation to large shipments. Shipper associations consolidate smaller shipments into large movements to gain cost economics. Brokers are intermediaries that coordinate transportation arrangements for shippers, consignees and carriers. Here if you see all these points we have already studied in the domestic segment, where you have transport brokers who provide services, you have transporters who collect a lot of part load shipments, convert it into a full FTL. The same things happen also in a global scenario. They also arrange shipments for exempt carriers and owner operators. Brokers typically operate on a commission basis. Brokers provide extensive services such as shipment matching, rate negotiation, billing and tracing. Then we come to the second part of our discussions today on international logistics, that's with, to deal with intermodal transportation. This includes transportation using more than one of the four modes like air, rail, road and water. Only truck is only practical single mode trip. Generally, if you see rail, air and water, you will necessarily have a road or a rail trip linked. Say for a sea shipment, you will have a road carrier bringing it to the port, or you will have the container loaded on a particular truck. For railways, it's most common to have a road shipment linked to it. So you are saying that only truck is the mode which can operate as a single mode. Generally all the others depend on the road and then they call themselves as intermodal transportations. It typically refers to containerized goods as opposed to bulk or general cargo, requires containers, less labor than traditional freight handling. The majority of these costs are incurred between the modes. You have the bulk cargo. Wet bulk cargo refers to fluids such as oil. Dry bulk cargo refers to non-fluids such as grain, coal, minerals, etc. Many goods that used to be shipped as bulk cargo are now shipped in containers, historically well-developed commodities. General cargo, whatever needs moving, flatbed trucks for odd shapes and general cargo vessels. This is required for general cargo transportation. Intermodal containers, so you see the number of containers that are here in this particular vessel. So for all international shipments you have these international transportation, international specialized agencies which provide services across the world. There are many varieties of containers, standard containers like 20, 40, 40 feet high cube, hard top containers, open top containers, flat racks, domestic containers, reefer containers, tank containers and high cube containers. Only 20 feet container is a 20 foot equivalent unit, one, because TEU is one term which you will keep on hearing, so it means 120 equivalent unit, one TEU. The marine terminal actors, the steamship lines, terminal operators, port authorities, county governments, city governments, security agencies, drayage drivers and licensed motor carriers, importers or shippers and freight forwarders and expediters. So these are the various type of stakeholders who together complete an international logistics transaction. So you have the steam shipping lines, terminal operators, port authorities. So steamship lines are basically shipping lines like APL, Costco, Maersk, terminal operators like MTC in the US, port authorities, so like you have the Navasheva, you have port authorities, the county governments like the state governments, city governments, security agencies, drayage drivers and forwarders and expediters. The marine terminal actors, 3PLs or logistics providers, customs brokers, CVPs, labor unions, interest groups, EPAs, railroads, they are all form various actors who play a part in this transaction. Their own objectives and remuneration or incentive schemes are given. Now, what are some of the intermodal issues which we still find today? Transportation agencies are still structured around modes. Transportation companies are still structured around modes. In fact, that they had to be during the regulation time. So, you do not have the individual players talking to the players in the other segments. You know, it's still the silo type operation. There has been much growth in intermodal transportation companies since deregulations like 3PLs, IMCs, and to some extent steamship lines. The transportation infrastructure is built by modal agencies that historically did not interact with each other. Now, to understand the intermodal transportation, we need to understand some of the concepts, some of the things that play a role, like the terminal. A station where freight is received or discharged is a terminal. It is situated at one end of the transaction, placed at a boundary, a point or part that forms the end from the terminus. So, it is basically the end. So, you have a terminal concept here. The name reflects their historical role. In the intermodal world, we usually refer to intermodal yards rather than terminals. Terminals or interchanges occur in all modes. You have the airports, your bus, marine terminals or port authorities, ferry terminals, train stations, railway yards, cross-dock facility for changing of goods, distribution centers or warehouses, or intermodal yards. They have common characteristics, and we will focus today on the marine ports and the intermodal yards. As you can see here, in the intermodal case, you have the gateway, which is, you know, receiving and serving to various modes. In the transmodal also, you have a hub model, which is distributing goods to various disciplines. The port terminals, so we have container, sea, offshore hubs, barges, rail terminals, on dock, transmodal, load center, satellite terminal. Any of the DCs where you are, you know, loading, cross docking, and necessarily warehousing or moving it forward. Characteristics of freight terminals: the core characteristics, infrastructure, equipment, storage and management, infrastructure, modal access, dock, siding, road, unloading areas, equipment, good material handling equipment, storage, yard for empty and loaded containers, and a good management system, admin, maintenance, access, security, and information systems. The ancillary characteristics: trade facilitation, free trade zone, distribution center, transloading, cross docking, warehousing, cold chain warehousing if necessary, storage, container depots, bulk storage, container services like washing, preparation, and repair of containers. Container handling. So, you have consolidation, transferring the contents of smaller containers into larger containers, weight compliance, transferring the contents of heavy containers into loads meeting national or regional weight limits, palletizing, placing loose containerized cargo onto pallets, adapting to local units, demurrage, handling back containers to owner by transferring containers into another unit. Equipment availability, making maritime containers available for exports and domestic containers available for imports to facilitate trade. And in supply chain, terminal and transloading facility as a buffer, delay decision to route freight to better fulfill regional demands, perform some added value-added activities like packaging, label, final assembly as an, you know, case-to-case basis. So, shipping lines and importers have different goals for container management. Importers, advantage, reduction of unit transportation costs, added value services. Disadvantage, transloading costs, loss of at least one day of inland transit time in loading and unloading of the containers, possible shortage of domestic containers, etc. So, just to diagrammatically show the port operations, you have the vessel, you have the cake crane bringing out the containers, putting into the chases, going to the local storage and out of the port gate. You have the wheeled versus the grounded facilities of how you load and unload the particular containers here. So, these are the wheeled storage, and then you have the grounded storage here. transport productivity metric. So, you know, one of the essential elements in intermodal transportation, which also affects international logistics, is the port infrastructure. It's a place in which India has a long way to go to meet the way the operations happen in developed countries. So, some of the metrics, or you know, you can say in modern terms here, KPIs include the TEUs per hectare handled, TEUs per annum, the dwell time, this is the staying time of the container, lesser the better, terminal time usage, crane productivity, etc. This is how you will measure the efficiency of a particular port. Port characteristics: Hong Kong and Singapore, the traditional Asian hubs, are transshipment facilities. New Asian ports in China are export facilities. There are many Indian ports like Navi Sheva which are really, really come up very well. Mundra, for example, is one of the India's best managed ports today. US ports have historically served as storage facilities. Storage has been cheap at times. Land has historically been inexpensive in the US, but labor has been costly. So that's the reason why you're seeing a lot of, you know, emphasis coming towards Asian and South American countries today. While throughput has increased dramatically, density, if you see, has not increased. This is particularly information on the US port systems. The West Coast terminal area has increased in this period of 1985 to 2005. The, you know, California ports, if you look at it, the, you know, throughout the years, the term handling tonnages have increased. Similarly, there's a ratio with the berth length which has gone up over the years. Throughput density variation across West Coast ports. So, you know, it depends on how, you know, if you see Los Angeles or Oakland or Seattle, the throughput density varies across the various ports in the United States. The berth length, the TEUs per feet, utilization at West Coast ports. So, Long Beach again, Los Angeles. Now, what are the operational improvements that has happened and that needs to be done to make it more efficient? Technology implementation like RFID, GPS, land area utilization, extended gate and operating hours, truck appointment systems, crane utilization to be made more efficient, increase intermodal percentage. Productivity improvements, as is true across the board in transportation, infrastructure is expensive to build or impossible to build at times. Solutions must be found to manage demand and utilize infrastructure in a better way. There is evidence that our ports are unproductive and that we can expect better utilization of the infrastructure. Especially in India, you have at times labor issues and infrastructural delays, procedural delays, you know, the draft, the silting of ports is a major concern in India. For example, the Calcutta port, because of silting, many, you know, heavy ships cannot enter the ports, for example. So they have to use other ports and send lighter ships to the facilities. These all need a lot of improvement. If you look at the global comparison in terms of throughput density, this is how the ports are actually doing. If you see Singapore, extremely efficient, Rotterdam is good. So these are the comparison across various ports of the world. Average crane productivity at different container ports, more or less okay. Hong Kong, Japan, very efficient. Certain ports in Canada, in Sydney, they have slightly more, you know, efficiencies that they can be built in from this graph. Transshipment percentages at Asian ports, very high in most of these Asian ports where the transshipment is happening. This is a typical port and unloading facilities of the cranes. So, to summarize, intermodal transportation is a concept of utilizing two or more suitable modes in combination with one another to form an integrated transport chain aimed at achieving an operationally efficient and timely, cost-effective delivery of goods in an environmentally sustainable manner from the point of their origin to the point of their destination. It is not a mode of transportation, but a mode of coordinating between various modes of transportation. The concept of transportation as a door-to-door service rather than a port-to-port service. The terms intermodal, multimodal, and combined transport are often used interchangeably with one another. The basic objectives: to remove barriers to flows inherent to traditional system, attempt to achieve seamlessness where relative advantages of each mode are captured, includes technical limits of transferring freight between competitors, to deal with organizational and legal constraints imposed by separate rates and bills. Main advantages: it gives flexibility, which is required in modern day international commerce, cost saving, opportunity to be creative in finding the most efficient way. Certain disadvantages: high cost by using several modes of transport. TOFC, COFC, the most widely used intermodal systems are the trailer on flat car TOFC and container on flat car COFCs. TOFC concept facilitates direct transfer between rail and motor carriages. The placement of trailer with highway wheels attached transferred to a rail car can lead to wind resistance damage and weight problems. The use of containers reduces these potential problems, as they can be double stacked and are easily transferred to water carriers. Container ship, fishyback, train ship and container ship are examples of the oldest form of intermodal transport. The fishyback, train ship and container ship concept loads a truck, trailer, rail car or container onto a barge or ship for the line haul movement on inland navigable waterways. The land bridge concept is based on the benefit of the ocean and rail combinations that utilize a single tariff which is lower than the total combined cost of the two separate rates. So the basic essence, the fundamental issue is that when you use intermodal, the freight rate ideally should be lower than if you had used a single mode of transportation. Four Pacific Rim countries have been coined economic tigers because of their economic policies: Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan and South Korea, who really have good port facilities and have helped move the intermodal concept of transportation. The direction for the future: customers of global supply chains in the future will continue to demand faster supply chain delivery of their commodities and products. Speed or total transit time will be a necessary factor for intermodal transport. Customers also want it at a cheaper rate and with more access to information. An increased awareness of the scope and magnitude of broadly defined and measured intermodalism will heighten the need for intermodal education and training for those being asked to manage and execute both new intermodal technologies and information communication systems and the increasingly constrained infrastructure of intermodalism. So, to conclude, it's very essential that intermodal transport is chosen and is given due weightage by logistics professionals, because the future will only see an increase in international trade and commerce. You will have specialized sites, specialized manufacturing facilities catering to a very wide geographically covered area. So you need to have fast and efficient transportation modes to reduce the total time to reach the customer, and that's where intermodal transportation will really help international logistics to prosper. So we understand that intermodal transportation and the improvement in such techniques will really help to augment international logistics. So that's the end of this chapter. I hope you have understood the essence of international logistics and how it is intertwined with the intermodal transportation and the growth of intermodal transport. Thank you.